Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Nuke, your office looks real nice.
Does it really?
Yeah, it feels. Wow. I think it could be because it's so gray and sad outside, but it just feels.
It is pleasantly gloomy outside.
Do you think it's because I just sprayed this Old Spice wolf thorn in here?
I don't know. I
mean, first time in Misty's life she's ever walked in my office and went, man, it just looks really nice in here. Not five minutes ago.
Is that the only thing you've done different today?
Yes. Five minutes ago, I picked this up from where Bear Newcomb parks his vehicle. It is a can of aerosol aluminum-free body spray, Wolfthorn Old Spice. I walked in, put a puff by the air conditioner. Ben's almost down. We almost lost one.
This chair.
You're in the chair.
That chair's got a reputation.
Be careful with that chair. We're going to introduce our guest here. I puffed this right by the air conditioner. Misty walks in and is like, man, it looks great in here.
Other things that
and
are different.
And you've never been more handsome.
Excuse me. Yes. He's got a wolf skin, or a coonskin hat on his head.
Wow. Just bring up the elephant in the room right off.
The raccoon in the room.
What's different about the office?
I think that you have tidied up the podcast equipment on that little
It does look
tote.
More tidy.
And I think that having it organized like that, as opposed to how it typically is, makes it feel cleaner in here. And I like a clean and orderly environment.
Hmm. I think it's because there's nothing laying right there.
All the stuff that's laying is laying at my back. I can't see it.
Yeah, right.
So it's just a matter of perception.
Did y'all notice there's a new bear hide in here?
This one right here?
Old bear hide?
That's a beautiful dark chocolate brown bear right there.
Yes, it is, Josh. Good eye.
Yeah.
Josh has an eye for color.
Mm-hmm. It's real glossy.
Many people
too.
Would just look at that and say it's black, but you're right. It's deep chocolate.
Yeah, pretty.
Deep chocolate. So that's the bear that I killed last year that's on the film, the Newcomb family bear camp film.
Mm. Oh, okay.
You know, when Bear killed his bear in National Forest, and then I killed the bear, that's the bear. I just got it back. It's a beautiful hide, probably a 6.5-foot bear.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good size.
Wow.
Weighed about 300 pounds. So that does bring up a great point about the office. I have been working on my tractor. I have a B26 Kubota tractor that I bought in 2007, brand spanking new.
I believe we put our house up as collateral. I'm dead serious.
I mean, it was like the biggest purchase of my life. Do you remember it, Dad?
Oh, yeah. Shoot, yeah.
And I bought it, and it was one of the best decisions that I ever made because I made a living driving that thing.
Right.
For basically, well, I started in 2005, ended that career stint in 2013. So from 07 to 13, really made a living off this little Kubota backhoe. I still have it, and it's got 1,200 hours on it. Those things hold their value, tremendous value. I had a lot of people try to buy it from me, and I won't sell it.
But it's like part of the family now.
Yeah. But I spent quite a bit of time digging out. So my office is on a
slope.
Slightly sloped ridge. I don't know, probably a 10, 15 degree slope. And I dug out probably 20 feet back into the ridge. And would you say that cut bank back there is probably 3.5-4 feet?
Yep.
So, I mean, moved a lot of dirt.
Yep.
And
for a Kubota B2600.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not a big tractor. And I use the dirt to fill in a bunch of other stuff, but I'm building on a north wing to the global headquarters of Meat Eater South.
The global headquarters of Meat Eater South.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right.
I haven't got the official clearing from Meat Eater for that title.
That's a little heavy duty, really.
Yeah.
You might find yourself working at Walmart if you're not careful.
But I have big plans this winter and spring. I've got a guy going to bring a sawmill in. We're going to cut some longleaf pine off Dad's land in Oklahoma. We're going to skid it out with the tractor. We're going to bring it back here. We're going to mill up all the framing lumber for the addition. I've cut some cedars off my place that we're going to use to line the inside. And basically, I'm going to build a big wing that's going to be for gear and primarily for gear and for Miss Newcomb to have an office. How about that?
Be awesome.
That'll be pretty awesome.
Yeah. How about that?
She's earned it.
After all these years.
She's earned it.
Yeah.
She's earned
it. So that's big news. Mm-hmm. Would you guys agree?
Agree.
I would agree.
Okay, so to my left, Josh Lambridge, Spillmaker.
Greetings, everybody.
Fantastic to see you. When we come back around, we're going to talk about what I'm wearing.
Okay.
And to...
Wow.
To Josh's left.
But that in a
Ben,
kind of fashion
Ben's not show. Really a guest. Ben, you've never been on Bear Grease, but you were on Bear Hunting Magazine podcast.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so Ben Legrone, longtime family friend of ours.
His and wife worked for...
Yeah, we were just talking about... Yeah. So Ben's wife worked for me for how long, Ben?
I think 8 years.
She was the copy editor
yeah.
of Bear Hunting Magazine.
Yeah.
And
she was like an English major.
And why it's kind of fun now.
Yeah.
Well, so my wife is... She's never really hunted. Doesn't know really... It's not her thing. But when you hired her, she had to read every single article. Every article that was ever in Bear Hunting Magazine, Jessica's read and edited, and then you'd also send the magazine to her so she would proof the whole thing and just look over
so
every
So she would individually read all the articles yeah. and edit them.
Yeah.
And then when I built the magazine, I would send her the finished version of the magazine, which she would read again.
Yeah.
I promise you, she read way more than I did about bear hunting.
I'm just glad that wasn't my job because that's a lot of time in the bathroom reading magazines.
Well, this one time, Clay told her straight up, Jessica, I think you know more about bear hunting than I do. To this day, any question I ever have about not just bear hunting, but the species, I ask my wife. I don't ask Clay.
Yeah.
And because she can file off all these stories and anecdotes and this biology, and it's like amazing because she's never hunted. And she, you know, she's from Midwest and kind of moved around a lot of places in the Midwest.
Yeah.
To my standards, would be considered Yankee, as we'd call it, you know, and which, you know, plenty of people up north hunt, but it's to this day very funny to me. And I genuinely learn a lot from her.
I love it.
We got to get her on the podcast
at some point. Yeah.
And hey, Dad, I was going to tell you this outside, but I thought I'd wait to tell you this. Ben and Jessica are internet sensations.
Oh, really?
For real.
They actually are.
Tell us about your business. That's not why you're here, but.
Yeah. So I guess you could say in the baby world, we're a big deal. If you're a baby, we're a big deal. So years ago, we started an online childbirth class, and it was this dream we had. And then during COVID, it kind of blew up because people couldn't go to hospitals and have traditional childbirth classes. And Jessica's a certified childbirth educator and a doula, a labor doula. And it just kind of grew from there to this whole brand and business where we build online courses for couples wanting to learn about childbirth, how to take care of babies. And we got a lot of big dreams and places we're taking in the future. But it's just me and her. We run the whole business on the internet. So it started out as an Instagram thing. We make educational, but comedic videos about pretty much every stereotype toward pregnant women and
my Instagram logarithm is thrown way off
because
it's like hunting.
Yeah.
And then
whenever we started, I had to unfollow our account too. So I was like, this is messing up my world.
So tell us what the Instagram name is.
Balanced Birth Couple. Balanced.birth.couple. And that comes from our company name, which is called Balanced Family. So we're helping couples learn how to balance all the information they read on the internet. Because you get all the extremes now. And the extremes on the internet thrive on both sides of the controversy. We try to teach couples how to be balanced, figure out what's good for them. So that's our business.
So they make a living, like he and his wife, full-time living off the internet business. They've got 100,000 plus people, right?
Yeah, 108,000.
On Instagram. Yeah. Big TikTok following,
right?
And then they sell these birth classes, so it's really pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And being your hunter, your lifelong hunter,
Lifelong hunter, born and bred in Arkansas. I'm actually like a multi generational Arkansan. I was thinking about because you always say you're like seventh generation Arkansan.
Yeah.
States do that?
I don't know.
It's weird in Arkansas the way people are like, I'm a seventh generation, I'm a ninth generation, and it's like.
We're alive.
This place
is so poor, so desolate.
True. People need to know the history of Arkansas. They might not know, like, Arkansas came from a bunch of people.
One of the most, Ben, we're going to get back to
you.
But on this topic, Mark Kenyon asked me about my mule trailer on his show, Deer Country.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he said, Clay, why are you riding around with this old beat up mule trailer? He said, is it like a family heirloom or is there some like sentimental thing? And I said, Mark, my family's been in Arkansas for seven generations, and that is not enough time to pull yourself up from the dregs of poverty. You can tell a lot about a man's expendable income by his mule trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Kenyon, silent.
He was processing that.
I'm very proud of you that you're a multi-generational.
When I started hearing you introduce yourself like that, I wanted to start counting it up. And I was I can't really count it up. I don't know. So I'm multi-generational.
Yeah.
But anyway, hunted my whole life and loved to fish. And my fly fishing mentor is in the room.
The land bridge himself.
This past year, Josh has got me on fire for fly fishing. So
really?
I love it. Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I absolutely love it. And it's all thanks to this guy.
I know that one of your girls hunts with you. I've seen her in pictures.
I got two out of the three hunting with me now.
Two out of the three hunting with you. Okay. Do either any of them fish with you?
Oh, they love fishing. Yeah. They love fishing.
Ben bought a boat too and he fixed up a boat, sold it, bought another boat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of feel lied to because I didn't get taken fishing a lot. Mm. All right. I just gonna throw that out there. That wasn't an experience I had. When I did have it, I was told I had to be quiet.
Oh, no. Not by me.
You know what?
No, not by... I'm talking about like as a kid.
I get it.
And now I see all these people taking their kids fishing, and I'm like, I know your kids are not quiet.
You think they were just looking for a reason to be quiet?
That I had to be quiet.
Never.
did people... Let me ask you something, Misty. Did people tell you that when you were doing pretty much everything else? Shopping, you know.
It's true.
You gotta be quiet when you're shopping.
You can't let other shoppers know what you're after. They'll take it from you.
We traveled a lot, and there's a fun story where my brothers basically said every time we went out to eat, not a joke, Misty, we bet you can't stay quiet.
Oh, no.
The whole order, or the whole this, or the whole that. And so one time a waitress came up and she's like, what are you doing? I had three older brothers who just tormented me. And all in fun and games. But I was the only girl, and it was like I was their favorite. One of my brothers told my mom, she's our chew toy. And so this waitress came up and I was pointing and it was weird because I wasn't talking.
Right.
And finally my mom said, they said they want to see how long she can stay quiet for, and she's kind of trying to prove them wrong because like I'm the youngest child, only girl. This is the sort of thing. And the woman felt really sorry for me because she had all older brothers. So they announced over the big speakers at this restaurant when after 20 minutes that they wanted to congratulate Misty for being quiet for 20 minutes. They brought me this big, huge sundae.
No way.
I felt vindicated. My brothers got so mad. I mean, like so upset because my parents were like, she does not have to share with y'all.
That's good stuff.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. It was a pretty good story. Kind of claim to fame. I could be quiet for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yes, I was told that a lot.
That's what happens. That's
good. And now there's a Let Misty Talk campaign.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true.
Going on across the world. Yeah. Well,
it's like a
Ben,
cycle.
Good to have you. So, to Misty's left, to Ben's left, Misty.
That'd be Misty.
Yes.
She been chatting.
To Misty's left, Gary Believer Newcomb.
Yes, sir.
Good to see you, man.
Hey, thank you. Good to be here.
Wearing his signature
hat. I get, not every day, multiple times per week would not be an exaggeration, of people sending me Black Panther stuff nonstop.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm seeing a lot of it now, too. You just on the internet, I mean, a guy go, here, look here, Black Panther. Grandma saw it walking through the backyard, you know, type deal.
Yeah.
And, you know.
It's real.
And in fact, they're I had a guy video. Yesterday say, does Clay still believe that Black Panthers don't exist?
Are you serious?
This? Yeah.
Was he serious?
It was Coy. Coy. He introduced me to a buddy of his from college. He said, hey, here's the believer.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we got to laughing about that. But
so he actually, he thinks that, like, I'm in the wrong.
Well, you know, he's not sure. And I said, well, Clay stays pretty close to the science. And I said, probably what we're seeing is pumice, you know, some, you know, painted something walking through there that's probably not a panther, but I still believe in them. I was just trying to describe what you probably believe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you're wearing a believer hat, which you usually do for the render. You know, Steve Rinella loves that hat.
Does he?
He wears it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
It feels pretty good on my head.
Yeah. Speaking of hats, last night I got a text from, I was coming home from Ohio, which is a foreshadowing of what's to come, which we're not going to talk about at all.
He's looking at me. Got it. Message
Misty,
received.
Let's see how long you can be quiet. No, just kidding.
Watch yourself.
I'll be honest. She was already telling me stuff in the house.
About where I've been.
And then I shut it
let's
down.
Just say,
I shut it
you
down.
Did a good job
let's
of
just
that.
Say. Bear Grease fans, you're not going to want to miss the next one.
You're not. I mean, like, sincerely, you're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, my friend Andrew Wills from Nashville, who has a band called Hawkin' Horse, sent me a text message of a screen clip of a television with the Bengals-Chiefs game, and there was a guy with a Bear Grease hat with his arm out, like, saying, like, first down, Bengals. And they zoomed in on him for, you know, he just stood out in the crowd. He was standing up and he had his arm out like this. And I assumed it was the call that was correct. It was
right.
First down. You know, they just randomly get crowd shots. Well, they zoom in on this guy for just like 2 seconds.
Right.
And he's wearing a Bear Grease hat.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. And my internet world just like lit up. People were just all over. Just like, Clay, I was watching NFL. There was a dude with a Bear Grease hat.
Really?
And then everybody chimed in about what he was drinking, which he was drinking. I couldn't even tell what he was drinking, but apparently it was some kind of beer. And people were going on and on about the beer he was drinking. And then he had a Bengals jersey on. And so the people that love the Bengals were like, this guy should be president. Bear Grease hat and a number 9 Bengals jersey. And then people were like, great hat, but they ought to, you know, they ought to drive him over with a truck for wearing that jersey. You know, the place just like erupted. But I thought it was pretty cool that he had a Bear Grease hat on. Which
it was cool. I saw that. Yeah.
The Bear Grease hat. And every time that I go somewhere, or just anytime Bear Grease hat comes up, people tell me that they were in a public random place wearing their Bear Grease hat and people stop them. And have had multiple people tell me that they've made friends in airports, restaurants, because they talk to this guy that has a Bear Grease hat on and they like have stuff in common with him.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, they're
Grease,
like, bro,
healing
we're
America.
Bros. Yeah.
So
that's
you're
right.
Pulling
one hat at
America
a time.
Together.
One hat at a time.
pulling America together.
You're bringing us all together, man.
Pulling That's America right. together, one hat at a time.
Healing America. That's yeah. what we're going to put underneath Bear Grease.
Hey, let's talk about your hat.
Okay, continuing on with headgear. Josh, why don't you describe what I'm wearing?
I would say
I wish Brent was here. Brent is so good at this.
He does have his extra tough boots on.
Yeah.
Kind of a milk chocolate brown. And then he's sporting these Cordura nylon overalls, Dan's Briar.
These
Briar-proof overalls.
These overalls are bad to the bone.
They look pretty bad to the
Did
bone.
Did you know that Dan's hunting gear is it's a company out of Ohio, and I watched their video today.
We're just Ohio heavy today.
Yeah, and I bought it in Ohio at a sporting goods store, and I went home and looked up Dan's. Dan's is based in Ohio, and these are handcrafted by the Amish.
Really?
100%. One human being made this entire thing.
Mm.
Like the zippers, the stitching, the cutting, the buttons was made by one person in Ohio.
Really?
The Amish people.
Wow. How do you know it was made by one person?
Yeah.
That's what they say. Mm. They say it's quality control. Like they have people that just make the whole thing. So they're able to, you know, when you pass off jobs, like you do this, you do this, you do this, like stuff could get missed. But they have real quality control. And I've never owned a thing of Dan's.
Hey, are
before.
Those waiter boots that Brent wears, are they Dan's too?
Probably. There's a couple of kind of rough hunting, coon hunting, like gear. Dan's is one of them. Wix used to be one, but I don't think Wix is business. And then Nightlight makes a brand of bib, like briar britches, chap overalls. But these are waterproof, briar proof, like super tough.
Mm.
I'm a big fan. So yeah, carry on.
And then
we're down up to the shoulders.
A shirt. He's wearing a button down shirt.
The shoulders are the front line of a man's physique. Mystique. Excuse me.
Pearl snap shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the crowning glory of this outfit would be this fine, handcrafted by one person, coonskin hat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And whose hides were treed by none other than the one and only Fern Newcomb.
The late Fern.
The late Fern Newcomb.
Josh made this coonskin hat for me.
Josh is the one person.
Josh is the one person.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it's a one-size-fits-all hat. Did you come up with that design?
I did.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So basically, tell us how it is.
Came to me in a vision. Laying awake one night. Yeah,
but it came to you.
Yeah,
like from I just outside wanted to, of you.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted a hat that everybody could wear. It wouldn't have to be sized.
So it has a liner inside of it. So it's a. Describe to me how you made these.
So the actual fur part is made from 1.5 hide. So you get the lid out of one. You can get the lid out of the half hide.
Yeah,
and then the sides and the tail come out of another hide. They're stitched together, and then the liner and the sweatband inside, it's a satin liner with a leather sweatband, is on the inside, and they're all joined together with they're all hand-stitched together, the liner to the hide. And, it looks really nice.
Yeah. So
this one's got a beautiful long tail on it. It was a beautiful hide.
Oh, it's so warm, just noble, regal, elegant. I'm going to go ahead and say this. We're probably, so I gave Josh 36 coon hides, tanned coon hides, and we're going to probably get like 12 hats out of them.
I think so, probably somewhere in that ballpark.
Okay. And at some point, most likely, maybe, it's possible, but probably will happen, I hope, in the future.
Probable.
This is good marketing.
I'm certain that it's likely that at some point they'll be for sale on themeateater.com.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
We're not certain. And let me just tell
this
you.
This is great marketing. It might be for sale.
Let me tell you. They
just keep your eye on the
merchandise page. They aren't going to be cheap. If you were to buy a coonskin hat that you supplied the coons to a custom furrier, you'd pay like $300 for a good coonskin hat. So it's not like,
so these, you know, when Dad saw it,
he was like, oh,
60.
Yeah, man, I'd pay $75 for that. And I was like, I bet you would. No, you'd think a coonskin hat would be cheap, but fur is actually, takes a lot of skill. You know, Josh has like 3 hours in building this, and then it costs money to tan the hides. And then, and we're not doing it to make money.
And are you counting the hours that it took to actually harvest these coons?
No, that's just free labor. Just, I'm giving it back to America.
Mm. just part of the
You're
mission
sewing,
of Bear Grease.
Yeah, sewing America's into been asking America. For.
Sewing into America.
One hat at a time. I mean, it just keeps coming back to that.
Yeah, we're probably gonna be raising some money for some special things through selling these hats.
This is like this episode could not be more vague.
Yeah. hey, but one question, all these coons came from Fern, right?
Absolutely. All these hides were treed by Newcomb's Ozark Bluff Creek Fern, RIP, the late Newcomb's Ozark Bluff Creek Fern. So about 3 weeks ago, you would have seen it on Instagram if you follow me on Instagram, but yeah, Fern died. I wasn't ready to talk about it. We had a render the day afterwards, and it was too soon. But now it's been about three weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. She was 8 years old. It was unfortunate. She died a little bit premature. It's complications with her lichiosis. We live in Arkansas and in the hub of the Fort Smith area, which is where there's an Air Force base called Fort Chaffee. I've heard this from multiple sources and actually heard it from a veterinarian. So, I mean, I tell this story for truth, that Ehrlichiosis is a tick-borne illness that is like Lyme's disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Humans can get it. Any mammal can get it. And Ehrlichiosis is endemic to, what's that?
A dolphin could get it.
That's a great question.
If there's tree and coons.
Yeah.
Those tree coon and dolphins.
That's a deep,
and you get
deep
it.
Thought, Josh. Ehrlichiosis is a disease, a tick-borne disease that is endemic to Southeast Asia. And the hub, have you heard this before, Ben?
Well, I know where you're going with it now, but...
Yeah. Well, the hub of where they were bringing service dogs back from Vietnam was Fort Chaffee. So they were taking dogs into Vietnam, bringing the dogs back, and basically these dogs brought...
Maybe Gary brought it back
from Southeast
when he was
Asia.
In Vietnam.
I think it was Dad.
Yeah.
Did you do a tick check before you got on the airplane?
No, I did not.
Hey, well.
Might explain the hallucinations.
When you came back from Vietnam, you'd had a motorcycle wreck.
I was all bandaged up.
You look like a war hero.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Why did you, tell me about, okay, we got, let me finish this thought, but we got to go back to that.
I'll help. Remember.
So, Ehrlichiosis. Mm-hmm. The further you get away from Fort Smith, the less likely that you're influenced by Ehrlichiosis. But, like, there's, like, a heat spot of within about 200 miles of Fort Smith that, like, almost every dog, this is an exaggeration, but close to true, like, almost every dog in this region is going to have some amount of Ehrlichiosis. Mm. And 2 years ago, Fern almost died before we figured out what was wrong with her, and we got her on antibiotics and treated her. And the older she got, she would go through spells of when this Ehrlichiosis would flare up, and you can't really cure it. You carry it your whole life, but when it flares up, you get on doxycycline and steroids and different things. And basically, I was gone for 8 days, and when I came back, she was just down. And, you know, you just almost wouldn't have noticed it unless you just were really paying attention. And it took me a day or two to realize, yeah, she doesn't look good. And basically, it was just too late. And we got her on doxycycline and got her on everything. And I couldn't bring her back from it.
Wow.
And she kind of, I mean, she was aging.
Yeah,
she was not
she was
the
8
same.
Years old.
She was not the same Fern she was 2 years before when she had a bad flare-up of it. So I think there's a little bit of, you know, the stages of grief, part of the denial and the bargaining and all that. I think there's a little denial about her baseline was pretty poor the last couple of years. I mean, I think.
But she hunted up until, I mean, hunted good up until last winter.
Yeah.
Even this summer. I hunted her this summer.
Yeah. I'm not saying she couldn't hunt. I'm just saying I think that Clay feels like if he'd have been here, he could have fixed this. I'm not sure he could have.
Right.
I'm not sure.
I'm going to write a song about this.
It'd be a heartbreaker.
If I'd have been there.
Man, there's an old country song about Feed Jake.
Yeah. But that was the owner
died. The owner died. Yeah, a little bit different. Yeah.
No, it really was sad for me. Fern was the best coon dog I've ever owned. And she came around. It was almost by accident that I got her, and she was such a good dog for me. She really, for me, she was. And so it was hard to lose her. It was. But I'm hunting a new young dog, and we're already gathering up some coons.
Does she treat some?
Yeah, yes and no. Not really all by herself, but I've been hunting her, and we've been bringing coons home in the back of the truck. Let me just say it that way.
What's her name?
Hoot.
Hoot?
Hoot.
That's good.
Yeah. She, a couple.
It's Fern's niece.
Yeah.
So Fern's brother is the sire of Hoot.
I'll see if I can find the video. She got her name because we put a video up of her on Instagram. She had the funniest, she's the barkingest dog we've ever had. Mm. And we, when she was a newborn, we brought her inside and she would get going and then she would kind of howl like a barred owl. She would sound the way she would. It was real funny.
We got a lot of hope for Hoot 23. that's the campaign.
Hashtag
hope for Hoot. Yeah. If you want to tag us me on that on Instagram, go for it. Hope for Hoot 23. It's all we got, man. we've still got Jed, which the world Bear Hunting Magazine people would know Jed. Jed was the dog that I used to make videos of that would jump up on my desk and everything. And man, I tell you what.
Jed's a sweet dog.
You learn a lot about a dog, and I think you learn, I mean, maybe you could learn this about people. Jed, if you turn Fern and Jed loose, and they went and treat a coon, you would think Jed was a top-notch coon dog, because he's going to strike with Fern, he's going to run with Fern, he's going to be there every breath, he's going to tree, you're just saying, man, I got two fine coon dogs, until Fern's gone, and Jed, he can't tree a coon for the life of himself.
He really can't.
He tries hard too, man. It's almost like he's confused. Like he burns out of there and he's like, here we go. Winter 22. Let's go. Coon season. Yeah. And then he goes out there and like he runs backtracks and he can't. There's all kind of things going on in coon hunting that a dog has to be able to do. They got to know which way to run the track. They got to be able to locate the tree. And Jed, he just can't do it, man.
My favorite part about hunting with Jed, though, that's great, is that he likes to show off. He's real athletic, and he's
a climber and a runner.
And he likes to leap. Trees. He likes to like get on a hillside and try to leap towards a tree. And it's kind of a beautiful thing to watch. Like you're out there in the evening, and you've just got a coon light out there, and you see that silhouette of that dog jumping from the side.
I've
of
got
the
pictures. Hill. Of Jed. It. No less than like 12 feet up a like almost straight oak tree.
Really?
He'll just run and hit that tree and just scramble up.
He doesn't have a great nose, but he's got a lot of enthusiasm.
What they do when they get up there is they just kind of push off the tree and then just come down and land. And it's actually dangerous. He's a climber. So lots of dogs get killed.
Oh.
Lots of dogs get killed by being climbers because if you have a slanted tree that a coon's in, they'll catwalk and get way up in the top of a tree. Brent was actually on a hunt where a dog died that had climbed a tree.
Well, that's
so
really sad.
Jed's only fallen out of a tree a couple times that I've seen.
Might be why he can't tree a coon now.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I don't know if you stopped in at an O'Reilly lately, but I use one because we have one right not too far from my house. People there are super helpful. I don't care if I'm getting boat batteries, car parts, whatever. Love those guys. They got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you don't have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free. In or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. If you need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you are a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts to be knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself auto. You can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple: gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.
Dad, Vietnam, when you came home, you had a motorcycle wreck. Yeah. What happened? Yeah.
Well, I can make this story real short or I can make it real long.
Make it as long as you want.
Okay. Well, we had a buddy when we were in the States that wanted to be a war hero. He had a buddy killed in Vietnam, and he tried and tried to get in something where he could fight. He really wanted to be a helicopter pilot, wanted to be a warrant officer. And he couldn't get through. I mean, he had a degree from University of Missouri, one of the smartest guys you've ever met, great personality. And so once they put him in the post office with me, he kind of devoted his whole career to just monkey with people. You know, it was real fun to be with him. And he was smarter than most of the officers. So, I mean, he could do cool stuff to us. Well, anyway, after he got out of a French dungeon when we were in Germany, my other buddy, we're already in Vietnam.
French dungeon.
Well, he got picked up for doing some stuff. It wasn't too good. And so anyway, his dad was an attorney. He came over.
Oh, so he straight up got arrested.
Yeah, it's pretty serious stuff.
Okay.
I mean, to us as GIs, it was, you know, it wasn't bad, but to the world it was.
Yeah.
So anyway, we get to Vietnam and we get him shipped over to us.
Yeah.
So we're all at this post office, and we got a one-man post office up in Way, the Tet of 68, where all the fighting was going on. And this was in 69. And so we told ourselves, if you'll get this guy in here, we'll have him behave as long as you're here. Once you leave, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or a month, we'll turn him loose.
Okay, so the boss man was going to be there for 3 more weeks.
Something like that.
And you requested a favor.
He was kind of our buddy. You know, he was captain.
And you said, hey, get this guy here.
If you could get him here, we promise you he'll behave until you leave. And so once he leaves, Quint takes over, man. I mean, this guy, I'll tell you his name. We've tried to contact him. We think he's probably dead. He was so crazy. But so he gets in the post office in Way, one-man post office. I mean, this is going to be a zoo. Well, we're at the big post office in Fubai, and I mean, we just can't wait to see what he's going to be up to. After about 6 months, 3 months maybe, he's got an apartment downtown, which you can't even get off the compound. I mean, you get there in a vehicle, you stay there. Right. You don't even get off the base. Well, he's got an apartment downtown. When you go into his hooch, he's got stuff from the commissary. He's fixed to open a restaurant.
I mean, this is an American GI in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a business in Way.
Well, he hadn't opened it, but he's got the merchandise there. He's planning where he's going to do it, and how he's going to pull it off, who he's going to get to run it. But he does have the apartment, and I spent the night with him one night. I mean, you could hear gunfire in the streets. So anyway, he buys a Honda 90 and a Honda 50. I mean, this guy's in Vietnam. And, of course, we're in Vietnam, and we're so bored that we just had to create stuff, you know, to get us through. Well, here, Quince got this apartment and two motorcycles. So
this is off of the base, and, you know, you're not even supposed to leave the base.
Yeah, he had stuff we would dress up in. He called it Korean outfits. We'd put on Korean hats, and we would walk off the base, even though we were bigger than Koreans, and we could get off the base, and he had little ways, and he could get us back to this shop where he had these motorcycles, and then we'd go ride these motorcycles all day and come spend the night in his apartment. And so anyway, we're just out, and he took us out into the Ashaw Valley. We'd go to restaurants. We thought we were going to a restaurant one time, and it was actually a family reunion. And so, I mean, that was pretty comical. And so,
I remember this. I've heard these stories my whole life. They go to this place that they think is a restaurant. There's all these people eating and all this food set out, and they like walk in and y'all like start eating, right?
Well, I mean, they brought us food.
They brought you food.
Yeah.
And then you like, yeah, like hoping to pay for it, and they're like,
it's this older guy was what they called an opium freak, and Quint, well, he could relate to him, you know. Quint can talk enough, and finally Quint looks over at us and goes, "Hey, this is a family reunion, and they're glad we're here." And so they brought us little things to drink and some little rice and stuff, and then we leave, and we just come out of the Ashaw Valley. If you know what the Ashaw Valley is, all this Agent Orange, that's where all the fighting. I mean, they were in the Ashaw Valley, those Viet Cong. And we go, "Quint, are you sure we can ride these motorcycles in the Ashaw Valley?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, man." He said, "We'll just hit the edge of it and come around to this restaurant." And, you know, we run into infantry guys in the back of a deuce and a half, and we pull up behind them. And, you know, they're all sitting there like this, and they look back, and they just loved it. They just went berserk.
When they saw that,
we were on four guys on two motorcycles,
and they were like, "Hey,
oh,
those are our guys."
Oh, there were four of you on two motorcycles.
Yeah, four of us on two motorcycles.
A Honda 90 and a Honda 50.
So I mean, we're driving through hooches. We're seeing big Buddhas about the size of your house back in the jungles. I mean,
wow.
It is a treat for a guy locked up in Vietnam. I mean, it's just like the most freedom I'd ever felt. So we'd play little games, we'd race and we'd chase. So Quint would drive one, I'd drive the other one. And then we had buddies on the back. And so my buddy, I just thought I'd slap him with a limb, you know, just be driving down the road and hit a tree like this.
Kind of lean out.
I'd lean back and I was going to slap him with a tree limb.
Yeah.
Well, there's concertina wire in it, and it took our motorcycle.
Oh, man, no.
It just skipped us down the highway, and my arm was all messed up.
So, like barbed wire?
Concertina wire.
Like the stuff they would use to keep people out. Wow. So it just, like, skidded y'all down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
And this must have been right before you went home.
It was. And so I had to go to the
How'd you explain
infirmary.
That?
Yeah.
At the infirmary.
Oh, I don't remember that part, but I know when I went home, I was bandaged from here down
And I've got a picture of me coming off the plane with my arm bandaged up. So,
oh wow. Anyway,
we you know, Vietnam was not good, but we made the best of it.
Yeah.
Your buddy could have been an undercover CIA or something doing some high level operations in the city.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had the ability to do anything, really. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, back circling full circle here, folks, like, we don't know if Dad did a tick check or not when he came back. So he may have brought the ticks back from East Asia. Ehrlichiosis, fern, coonskin hat. Here we are back again in the render.
Bear Grease podcast.
That was a great
taking you on a journey
there.
Tonight.
Yeah, it was a long way to get there. Mm-hmm. But here we are at Bear Grease. The Bear Grease render.
And kudos to Ben for bringing it back to the actual topic of the render.
Yes.
No, I was actually dead serious. Like, what if he really was an undercover guy doing some high level stuff? I mean,
Yeah.
We knew he wasn't.
That's what they all said about RT, too. Okay, so this third Secret Agent Man podcast. Let me say that when I went to Ohio to meet with RT Stewart, you never know what you're going to get into. That's what's so wild about what I'm doing is I envision this being one podcast. You just don't know how someone's going to respond to, or just if they're going to give you a lot or give you a little, or just how it's going to go. And when I was with RT, I spent 3.5 hours with him just talking nonstop. And I knew, I was like, this is really good. There's a lot of story here. And so, you know, we were able to make 3 full podcasts. So just to review, if you've not heard them, the first one was called Secret Agent Man RT Stewart, which was a big high-level overview of RT's life as an undercover agent, kind of what they did, how they did it, and it ended in a climactic moment of me asking RT, was it worth it? Like, all that you had to do. RT talked about the difficulties he had with family, and he said no. And that was like a really unique podcast. The second podcast was about, it was called Secret Agent Man, Operation Redbud, Part 2. And that was about the biggest sting that they ever did, which was the largest turkey poaching sting in the U.S. at the time. The third one was called Secret Agent Man, Instinct. And it was really, really what happened from a functional level is that I had built these 2 podcasts, but I still had multiple disconnected, really fun stories from RT that I couldn't fit in the other ones. So, but I really wanted to tell those parts of the story. And then I'd also interviewed Dr. Matthew Sharps, which I need to make a correction. I said he was from
Fresno.
I stated the wrong university that he was from. He's from California, I believe he's from California State. Somebody look up where Dr. Matthew Sharps is a professor of. I need to make a correction there. But he gave basically what I was trying to do in the stories that were told about RT was that he just had an uncanny ability to get out of situations. And then I started asking Dr. Matthew Sharps about that, about how humans respond under stress, and when we go on autopilot, what happens. And he starts talking about script violations, and how there's a whole lot of stuff that's built inside of us at a DNA level that we feel like is unconscious and unplanned, but it's actually like really deep inside of us. And he gave some really unique examples that didn't directly relate to RT, but showed us that we are flowing at a whole level of action sometimes that we don't even connect to conscious thought. For instance, like him saying that humans have an innate, built into them in their DNA, desire to be near cover at dark.
Yep.
Did y'all think that was interesting?
That was very interesting. Fascinating.
I thought the part about like even paintings, like we have like preferential taste inside of paintings that we want people to. Yeah, I thought that was super fascinating.
Yeah,
I mean that's at a DNA level. But if you think about it, envision yourself with your family out in a big giant field, and it starts to get dark, like, you, I mean, I guess you could rationalize staying in the middle of the field, but like, you're like,
I don't know. I'd want to be near the cover.
We need to get some cover.
Oh, and where you could climb to safety.
Yeah. And that's what he said. He said, because we used to have to watch out for big cats. I mean, some people in Arkansas and Alabama still do.
Black Panthers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But
it's probably a little stronger in us, that sixth sense.
Cal State, Fresno.
California State in Fresno is where Dr. Matthew Sharp started. He was a neat guy. He was a fun guy. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you said, wasn't it?
Well, I said it on the first one. The second one, I said a different
one. Okay.
And somebody called me out on it.
I was really fascinated by a human's ability to three times, like your ability to memorize tracks.
That was interesting.
In his test sample were like urban students, which was amazing.
Yeah.
That's good research. I'm glad there's guys researching and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's what I thought when I heard that. I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah. It just makes you wonder how much we really are flowing. Did it make sense when I did the spot on Supernatural? Did that make sense in why I was saying that?
It does to me.
Everybody's quiet.
I was going to say the same thing. It does to me.
I mean, it does to me because I think I think from our worldview, and that's what I was thinking as I was listening to this. You know, we have space inside of our worldview for a spiritual component of our life. And you know, like I think, I don't know if like doctrinally, if that's the right word to use, but like we believe there's a spirit, soul, and body, and that these are three aspects of a human being. And we do things to intentionally make our spirit alive and active and a dynamic part. So I feel like when I was listening to that, I was thinking there's for sure things that have happened that are in the supernatural realm that I've experienced personally. And I would have a hard time separating those things from what they described as like these DNA encoded.
Well, that was kind of my point, was that there are mechanisms that describe things that maybe someone would have attributed as a sixth sense or something supernatural. And then you could go, well, turns out it wasn't supernatural. Turns out this is a result of, you know, just humans being on the landscape for how long. And all I was saying was, I absolutely believe that. But I was saying the mechanism of how this stuff happens does not negate for me another thing that I'm not talking about, which, and I was just like, I absolutely believe in the ability for someone to get information that absolutely doesn't come from here and doesn't come from our DNA, but comes from a divine source. That's all I was saying. Because I guess the next train of thought was like, oh, shoot, there's no such thing as instinct. Instinct is just built into our DNA. We're actually tapping into some unseen database of intel that's making us move.
The way that I always summarize this kind of struggle you're talking about between like science and spirituality is that they're not mutually exclusive. They answer different questions. Like science addresses the how, and the spirituality addresses the why.
When I
hear stuff about that, and you know, we can trace this anthropologically to blah blah blah, I'm like, well, to me that just answers the how, but it could still be some divine source. So that's one thing I love about Bear Grease is it. To me, when you try to whittle everything down to this, you know, super scientific rationale, it actually kind of oversimplifies it.
Yeah.
Because there were scientific traceable evidence and conclusions that were being brought up in that episode. But to me, that doesn't negate how amazing it is.
Yeah.
It's like, look at this ability, these social abilities that we have. Because of our large brains, because of however long we've been here, whatever, it's pretty incredible. And to see that go from this ancient context to now this guy, you know, in this context of undercover.
Yeah.
I like the whole series because it just showed me just how unexplainable our minds are and unexplainable people are. And to me, it's just a really cool series.
What about... when he, go ahead, Misty, what were you going to say? Let Misty talk, 23.
I was just going to say, I think one of the things, you know, he talked about these fight or flight instincts kind of brought that on. Mm-hmm. And this guy was putting himself in an incredibly dangerous situation. And one of the things that I think about a lot is that just how people over time, that spiritual component, that sixth sense, whatever you call it, has become numb or more so than it was 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because of philosophies of thought that have shifted and that say, well, that's actually not even, you know, if it's not measurable, visible, these are things, if it's intangible, we repeatable. Don't, yeah, all those things.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. So that's part of that. Part of it is that society has shifted in most parts, in a lot of parts of the world, to where we're not in such a survival state. And one of the things that I think is interesting, an interesting question to ask is, have those things numbed us to the point and numbed our kids and the kids that are growing up now to the point that they are going to have to, it's hard. You have to make space for that aspect of your life to come alive. And this guy basically created that space by putting himself
into like a wild situation.
Yeah. In a wild situation. And
if the structures of life were tore down around us, we'd all get real spiritual real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched my bees last week. We had like 70 degree weather all week long. And the way they acted the night that it was going to drop to 20 from like have that 50 degree, which is a big deal, was interesting to me. Just like watching them, they were out and alive, but they were kind of crazy. They were, bees can be peaceful or they can be agitated, and they were agitated. And I, you know, you hear all these stories about the birds before that big tsunami, that the birds kind of, and all the animals retreated from the coast. It's almost like they knew. So there was some definite biological things. But I think I have like real specific examples, even of you, of like being concerned for you or not concerned, where I did feel like it was a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
And but I also feel like, I don't know, you make yourself more open to that realm. Or,
yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, it was, it was interesting. I also thought it was interesting when he said that humans can, can pick out a serial killer just by looking in their eyes. Now, he said they didn't know they were serial killers, but if you gave an eye gate image of like 10 people, you would be like, that guy and that guy I don't trust.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, some percentage of the time, a high percentage of the time, they're like, well, okay, those two guys are serial killers.
That's
what I tried to describe, which was kind of hard to do, but think about an actual image of someone's eyes. Like envision just like a cropped photo where all you could see was eyebrows over and, you know, maybe under the eyes, like 2 inches across the bridge of the nose. What would be different about that between people?
What does a serial killer have?
I mean, literally, like you could draw it out and you could say, well, his eyes were slightly closed more. His pupils were bigger. The Gary Newcomb's always looking up pupils. He is. I walk into dad's house and he hadn't seen me in a month.
You've been smoking marijuana.
Yeah, I know. He does. I walked into his house the other day after being hunting and he hadn't seen me in a while. And I can always tell when dad hadn't seen me a while, he just stares at me for a long time. And he said, you look like you're on drugs. And I was like,
actually, your mother brought that up. You really didn't. But I do notice certain people. In fact, I know it's not always true because I've seen it in two or three people that I know aren't on drugs, but their pupils are about this big.
Right, right.
Hey, let me say something about what you're talking about, all the spiritual stuff and six senses and things. I really liked this guy. Your PhD guy. I mean, and I think what he's saying, there's a lot of truth to it. But there's another side of that thing that the boy missed.
Mm.
And that is that when I raised you guys, Judy and I did, we would not allow y'all to fight and argue. And it took something away from you where when you got out in society, you weren't as equipped as other kids to verbally defend yourself, even though I never saw it. But I just know there's a reason it's so consistent within kids to scuffle and argue and learn how to be a defense attorney. I mean, they really do, I think. And so he was raised up with two or three older brothers. So his whole life, RT is spending a great amount of time trying to survive. He's learning how probably now, not necessarily with you guys, but a lot of kids, you know, if you're brought up in the ghettos, you learn how to lie to the police. You learn how to tell stories. You learn how to get out of stuff. You know, he was learning how to think real quick on his feet. Mom, I didn't do that. You know, I mean, he learned this stuff as he was growing up. So he was very well equipped to handle things quick.
Yeah.
Or his brothers were going to beat him up.
Yeah, because his brothers were fighters.
And whether you believe it or not, there's a lot to that. He trained his whole life for this.
Mm.
Just, you know, he was a fighter. He was an interesting guy. You know, he's in law enforcement. If you're going to survive as a little kid and you got an older brother, you know what it was like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good point that and it wasn't like this guy was living a real protected life. I mean, the stories that he told about his life, the coal mines and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And when they asked him how many fights he got in, and 40. He's like, "Oh, not many."
Was 40. That on this episode?
Yeah, that was on this episode.
Oh, that was one of my favorite stories.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Only 40.
Only 40.
So, you know, 40 fights. How many times did he have to defend himself in front of a parent or a police officer or a school teacher or, you know, his girlfriend, somebody.
Right. He had to explain himself.
I mean, he had to go, wait a minute, you know, he had to be quick on his feet.
Yeah. So, yeah, he did.
I think what I hear you saying is that before you try to jump to all these big biological conclusions, maybe look at a guy's immediate family and
you
can probably get a lot of.
Yeah.
I definitely saw that a lot when I used to teach in public school, and it was kind of sad, but you could watch a family, you could watch boys and girls growing up and be like, man, I don't want them to end up in prison, but man, it's going to take a lot of intervention for these behaviors to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so those patterns are pretty traceable. And
there's a movie that Opie Taylor was in The Courtship of Eddie's Father. Did y'all see that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. My mom liked all these old movies, and in it, he was trying to explain to his dad what made a good woman, the type of what he was. His dad was a widower, and Richie Cunningham. Ron, what's his actual
Ron
name?
Howard?
Ron Howard, yeah. Uh-huh. So, but Opie's a little boy, and he describes, like, squinty eyes are the kind of woman you don't want. He describes some other characteristics as well, but the kind women were the ones with the round eyes, and it's real funny. You should find that clip and play it, because it's actually...
He's right, didn't he?
It's really funny. And
he
was
round eyes.
Oh, okay.
Well,
not a bad girl. Not really, actually.
Hey, what about the movie? I'm real bad at remembering the name of movies, but this older, smart mafia guy was giving this young kid some advice. He said, when you date this girl tonight, let me tell you what, you take her to your car, and you open the door, and you get her in, you close the door. Then you go to your side and make sure the door is locked. On your side. When you come to the door, pull out your key to unlock. If she doesn't unlock that door, just take her home.
What was he saying?
Well, he was just saying, if that girl has not got enough smarts to look over and see the door's locked and care enough about you to reach over and unlock it, take her home. And, of course, it made a lot of sense when you watch the movie. But so there's little things that you can watch for. Girls that wear rubber boots are always really good wives.
Yeah.
Mrs. got rubber boots.
Yes.
Cashmere sweaters and fancy pants and shirts and rubber boots. Yeah, I like that.
So there were multiple stories. I think one of the best stories was when he was buying walleye from a guy near Lake Erie. So Ohio, I'm now like an Ohio expert.
Wow.
I find I really connect with these guys from Ohio. Ohio's a pretty rough place.
You know, there's the Appalachian Trail to Ohio. What do they call that? They call that highway that runs from...
I don't think it goes through Ohio.
No, it does. It lands in Ohio. It's where people migrated away when they were trying to get work outside of the coal mines, and they landed in Ohio.
Mm.
Oh, what do they call it?
We're out of our lane here.
Okay.
He was buying illegally caught perch. There was a big thing going on where guys were catching perch and selling it illegally.
Have you ever eaten yellow perch?
No.
Have you ever eaten walleye?
Yeah, yeah, walleye.
Those are two of the best eaten
yellow
fish.
Yellow perch is, too.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Our friend Troy Booth made us perch. Made us fish tacos out of perch one day.
Really?
It was delicious.
Yeah, I kind of was wondering, like, around here, a perch is not, a great, you know, people eat them, we eat them, I mean, whatever, but it's not, you wouldn't die for a perch out of the pond over here, or brim, as we call them.
But, a perch is something different, I think.
Oh, it is. It is totally different.
Yeah, it
but
was delicious.
Buying perch, buying these yellow perch, and the guy, they're at a party, and you hear a bigger story. Chip told a real condensed version. They're at a big party. And these guys are like pretty wealthy, but they're selling a ton of perch illegally, and RT's buying it, and he's a known buyer. He's been buying it, just racking up tickets for him. He would weigh every when they would sell him fish, that he would go, you know, they would say like, here's 2 pounds of fish, and RT would be like, are you sure? And he'd get his scale out and weigh it and document it. Write it down
right in front of them.
Yeah, yeah, and be like, okay, that's actually 2.7 pounds. Thank you for the extra, you know, whatever. But the guy says, "How do I know you're not a game warden?" And then RT jumps up, yells at the guy, and says, "I think you're the bleeping game warden." He says, "I tell you what, take off all your clothes." And RT starts taking his clothes off, drops his pants down to his ankles, pulls his shirt off. Throws his shirt on the ground, standing there with his pants at his ankles, shirt off, at a party, yelling at this guy, demanding that he take his clothes off so he can see if he's carrying a wire. And the guy that thinks RT is a game warden is just like, chill out, man. and then RT's wearing a cowboy hat, and he's wearing the wire under his cowboy hat.
Love it.
I mean, I thought it was so cool that Sharps, he told me what that was. It was a script violation.
Yeah, there you go. That was really interesting to me because I've actually seen that. We've all seen that take place in our lives. That's where these little kids learn this stuff. The really sharp kids, you know, mama jumps on them for something. They go, well, Susie just shot the game warden, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, then what? So this girl's free, you know.
Script
she's
violation.
Yeah, script violation.
Do you like how I encourage people to try it?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I did.
I was waiting for the right moment. But I said it. Sometimes people ask you for stuff that you can't give them. And so you gotta find a way out. Script,
you know,
violation.
I think the thing about kids, Mike, in our family, we knew if we could make our mom laugh, so you would be getting in huge trouble. But if you could make, because she's got a weak spot, if you make that woman laugh, you could get out of anything.
And your brothers are all funny.
And they,
well, that's
come
why
on
they're
now.
Funny.
My brothers are all funny. I'm hilarious.
I'm assuming that you never did anything wrong, Misty.
I didn't.
And
do
had to get wrong. Anything. Yeah. Get out of it.
Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I don't know if you stopped in at an O'Reilly lately, but I use one because we have one right not too far from my house. People there are super helpful. I don't care if I'm getting boat batteries, car parts, whatever. Love those guys. They got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you don't have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free. In or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. If you need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you are a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts to be knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, friendly. Professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself auto. You can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app. You can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple: gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.
Okay, the other one was, so the script violation, like, I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
The other one was, he's sitting around a card table, and there's been a bald eagle that's been killed.
Yeah,
I thought that was crazy.
That was something.
The poachers go, are setting him, he doesn't know it, but they say, we know who killed that bald eagle. And RT never lifted his eyes off his cards. He had his player playing poker, and he just never paid any mind to it. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, the guys go, man, we thought you were a game warden. That's why we said that eagle thing. They laugh. I mean,
crazy.
That is pretty crazy.
That's pretty good.
To me, that was that story was told the most about his complexity.
Mm.
Like, for a person to have all that confidence and fearlessness, yet the self-control in that moment, that to me was really interesting. Like, the script violation, like, comedians do that stuff all the time to be funny, you know?
Yeah.
I used to have a friend in college, and if you're parked in front of those concrete barriers, he had a big old Jeep, he'd always, instead of, you think you're going about to back up, he'd drive over it, you know? It's just hilarious. He was always doing something weird like that. But in that moment, I want to know what went through his brain in those milliseconds to know that would have put him in danger.
I want to know that too. That's what I, when I was listening to this one, just listening to him talk, I thought, you know, RT's a fun guy, like, did a big service, but he kind of rough. I mean, when he was talking about his stories, I thought I could have gone to high school with this guy. I mean, like, I know people like him who are just smart, but pretty rough, and that really uniquely equipped him for this. And I couldn't help but think how much of this was just like, you just kind of learned to shut your mouth and not say, like, maybe he wasn't being strategic in that moment. Maybe he was, and looking back, he's like, oh, that was really strategic. Not to discount what he did, but just like, maybe you just kind of know how to handle yourself around rough people.
Well, and he even said, you said you were a master at that. And he said, well, I didn't know it at the time, but looking back, I was pretty good at it.
Isn't that the way that people do things, though, is that he wouldn't have thought I was good at this.
Yeah.
Like he just was doing what he knew how to do. And then, you know, 30 years later, when you kind of examine what he did, you're like, yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, that's kind of the way a lot of stuff works. I mean, that's the way guys in wars often, they come back from a war. They're like, dude, we were just doing what we were supposed to do, and it was terrible. But then, you know, you dive into what they did, and it's like, that was pretty heroic. That was pretty pretty unusual action.
Yeah.
You're like, well, maybe it was. Yeah, yeah. He wasn't too, to him, it was just normal life, you know? Yeah. But
when he stripped down, that was the danger right there. I mean, somebody could have said, okay, let's look at your hat now. You know, yeah. I mean, he could have been, and his goose cooked, so he was gambling, and he knew from probably childhood experiences that you get naked, and from most folks, you can get away with a hat on.
That's why you wear that believer hat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know, but that, you know, I would not have ever had the savvy to do that. I mean, that takes a war type hero type guy to say, hey, man, I'm gonna lay her on the line right now, brothers.
He didn't have a choice, though. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that we're not putting ourselves in is these high stakes moments, and that's what is so unusual. What was the other one? So it was the walleye, it was the eagle story, and then Chip Gross told
they
a
call
third.
Him RT, real turkey.
Yeah, real turkey.
In
the
40 fights.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just crazy.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, the real turkey. Now, I think the real turkey was just wit.
I
don't think RT ever thought, if I'm ever called out by a turkey.
Nah, yeah, he just pulled that out of his hat.
He's premeditated
smart guy,
a lot
man.
Of these
that's
actions,
what it
you know.
Down to.
That's why they call me real turkey, RT, you know.
With burst of adrenaline going towards his brain.
Exactly.
your fight or flight response is to shoot adrenaline to whatever is needed at that time.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned the cortex a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And then this guy brings it up again. So if you get too much blood flowing through your cortex, it doesn't work properly, or what was he saying?
No, I think what he was saying was, in a fight or flight moment, your body, your physical body requires more blood energy to potentially fight or run. And so it takes blood away from your brain.
I got
you. So you actually aren't consciously thinking, but you go on autopilot.
I got you.
So there's less fuel in your brain, and so your brain is just running off. Instinct, whatever you want to call it. That's what I understood.
Yeah.
Is that what y'all understood
too?
Yeah. So, yeah. But
we're all doctors, so we know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a fun series. I think people really liked it.
Did he retire from DNR?
Oh yeah, yeah. And he did.
Hey, what about this? Was just one of the things of this episode that really surprised me, that the news. The Ohio State News ran a story on undercover wildlife agents while he was undercover.
Okay, Ms. Newcomb, we actually covered that in the first episode and this one.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, in the render we talked about it?
Were you able to listen?
No, did we talk about that in the render?
No, so, okay, in the first
Isaac
episode...
Isaac, cut that out where Clay was real mean to me.
In the first episode, no, Chip Gross told a story. Chip Gross, the guy who wrote RT's book in first person.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
He was a game warden in Ohio, but he also wrote for Ohio DNR's like magazine that they sent to all their constituents. They had just started this undercover unit in the wildlife agency, and it was public knowledge. It wasn't like super top secret that like, hey, we're doing this thing now. And he went to the supervisor and asked if he could write an article about the undercover agents, and the guy said sure, and so he writes an article, and target number two, we all know target number two,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice guy
carries the magazine article back to RT and says, look at this, these guys are living with these folks. And RT's like, golly, I can't believe it. And RT was very angry at Chip Gross
for writing the article.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that. That's the way I felt when I can appreciate
that
for sure.
And you heard him bantering back and forth. So in the interview, Chip Gross was there with me. And Chip is funny, man. Chip is like, I don't know how old Chip is. Maybe Chip's 70. I mean, he's a really fit guy, really smart, sharp, like fun guy.
Like Gary.
And I'm sure Chip is going to be listening to this podcast. So, Chip, hat tip to Chip Gross.
Uh-huh. And if you're only 62, sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that, Chip, if you're not 70. No, Chip's a lot of fun, and he's a great writer. And he wrote the book, Poachers Were My Prey, which you can find on Amazon.
How did the book do is what I was curious about. Do you know?
Yeah, it did. It did well for a book that, I mean, it wasn't like a New York Times bestseller, but it was just kind of a regional book published by a state university. And so I don't know the numbers, but I think the book did well. And I know he's got a lot of sales on it since this podcast came out.
Awesome.
So Chip was there, and he and RT were going back and forth about, you know, RT was like, I couldn't believe you did that. And Chip was, he was like, sorry, man.
How big is RT? I've been kind of wondering if
I should. How big an old boy is he?
How big old boy is he?
RT, you know, Mercer.
He's got to be over 6 foot, you know. I mean, he's.
You think I could take him?
Oh, yeah. RT?
How many fights you been in?
Gary, believe in Newcomb?
One. And I didn't start it. This guy jumped on me. I didn't have any choice.
No, he's pretty good. He's probably 6'1", 6'2", and, you know, he's probably not in fighting shape these days, but I wouldn't want to fight him. I mean, if I fought RT, I mean, it'd be,
he'd know he'd been in a fight.
He'd know he'd been in a fight.
Good.
I'm going to start saying that to Clay. You can engage in this argument.
There you go.
You might even win.
You'll know you've been in a fight. That was good.
That's funny.
That was good. Well, I can't wait. I can't wait for the next episode.
It's going to be good.
No foreshadowing?
No.
None.
Zero.
Wow. Takes a lot of personal discipline on you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But when I wear this coonskin cap, I feel like the king.
You're an oak.
I feel like a mighty oak tree with a giant boar coon nestled in his branches underneath an Ozark moon swaying in the wind.
Wow.
Great to have everyone.
It looks like a beautiful image. 80s hairstyle.
More thing. Okay. Pretty sure December 14th, almost certain, probably it might be, I know for sure.
Potentially.
Potentially, Meteor Season 11, my episode with the Moose.
Oh, already?
Will be out December 14th.
Cool.
Oh, good.
Pretty
so,
cool, huh?
Listen, let me explain the Meteor.
We might need to have a watch party for that.
Yeah.
And maybe we should eat some moose.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. It's a good episode. I've seen it.
I've named the Moose Steve.
For everyone that doesn't understand this, Meat Eater, the television show, my friend Steve Rinella's show, was on like Sportsman's Channel for a long time. And then the last 4 years, it's been on Netflix. And that's where the world was able to watch Meat Eater, which is really cool. This year, Meat Eater Season 11 is only on, it only streams from themeateater.com. So it's not on Netflix, but it's the same quality. I mean, it's like Meat Eater. And
yeah, you just don't have to pay a subscription.
You don't have to pay for it. All you have to do, you got to put your email in. Literally, you go to the website, you click up on videos or shows, Meteor Season 11, and then it asks you for an email. You put that email in. I mean, heck, you can use my email. Just put in clay. I'm just kidding.
I did that today, and if I can do it, anybody.
You got
can.
On there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good deal.
I had a neighbor text me and say, I saw Clay squirrel hunting. Sir, you know, he told a little bit about squirrel hunting. I said, well, I'll try to find that.
Yeah.
I think it's the one that you did years ago,
That one's on Netflix, though.
Netflix, yeah. See, he probably saw it
on
Netflix.
So the last four seasons are still on Netflix.
Those will remain on Netflix. So you'll still be able to watch Meteor on Netflix. But the season 11 is only on themeteor.com, and they've been releasing episodes one per week since about, like, October 26th. And so I think there's 8 episodes in season 11.
I need to get caught up. I've only watched like
the
first three.
Yeah, I was on another one too. Mm-hmm. I killed that buck right there. That's a buck I killed in Nebraska on Jordan Bud's
farm. Which
one?
This one over here?
The skull.
Oh.
The skull there.
Beautiful.
Yep. We had
it's a good looking deer.
A neat hunt in Nebraska. So that moose hunt was really, it's incredible, man. I'm a moose hunter.
Did the show turn out well?
I think it did. I think Steve thought it did.
One
too.
Hunt.
Sweet.
One hunt.
I'm a moose eater. Let me just say
me
that.
Too.
I'm a big fan.
It, hey, I saw your deer hunt where Rinella was with Jordan.
Uh huh.
And you were by yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the deer.
That buck right
that's
there.
That buck.
Yeah, in Nebraska. I mean, that was pretty cool because you were by yourself.
Mm. Yeah.
Did I interpret that correctly?
Well, I mean, I was by myself.
I mean, she probably told you where to go and what to do, but
well,
I mean, you were out there hunting on your own.
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't even that great. What wasn't fully understood in the episode was that Steve was hunting over on this cornfield, and I was like a mile away from him, but I could see him. It's so flat out there, so I'm watching them like about a mile away, and I'm here. They see a buck come running by just out of range, but kind of in their quadrant, that buck, that morning, and it runs into the corn. Well, we meet up for lunch, and they're like, yep, we saw a buck. And I saw the buck, too, but it was like three-quarters of a mile away from me. And they go, yeah, it was a good buck. It ran into the corn. And Steve wanted to go kind of still hunting that evening. He wanted to kind of stalk through the river bottoms. And I said, well, dude, if you're not going to sit in that spot, I said, I'll sit in that spot because that buck went in that corn and he's going to come back out of that corn. That's what I thought.
Makes sense.
And so Steve abandoned the spot and I went to his spot. And sure enough, that buck came out of the same row of corn he went into. I mean, just like
he literally was like 20 feet in there.
He just turned around. He backed out. It was like put his reverse lights on, backed out of the corn, turned around, jumped the fence, and boom, I shot him. And so the whole week, that was like the first day. And so the whole week, I'm just hanging out in camp, and Steve and Jordan are out there hunting, and I kept saying, "Should have been your buck, Steve. Steve's buck. I killed your buck. I'm sorry, man. I killed your buck." And so, you know, that's what he talked about on the episode was that he was like, Clay killed my buck. So it was funny. Steve's a lot of fun to hunt with. He really is. Man, for all the – okay, I'll clear the air too. On social media –
We're going deep today.
On social media, you will see me. Like if you only knew me from Instagram, you would see me razzing Steve Ranella and him razzing me. And that's fun. We enjoy that. But, I mean, Steve is a great guy to work for. He truly is. A great guy to hunt with and a ton of fun. So, and Steve has been a big mentor to me. I mean, it kind of goes without saying, but in the media space, like when Steve gives me input on Bear Grease, I listen. I really do. And
when's
so
he going
to
be?
We've stayed at their home. He and his wife
when's
have been
he
really
be
generous
on the
to Misty and I. He's been on one render.
Yeah, but not with the real render.
That's a good idea. We ought to get him down here.
Yeah.
He's a busy man.
He didn't even listen to the render. I've been wanting to put my application in verbally, but I know he doesn't listen to it.
He listens to the Bear Grease podcast religiously.
I mean, you know, we're just nothing. I mean, come on.
Well,
yeah.
You know, when
he's wearing your hat, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, true, true. What were we going
to
say, Nick?
I was just going to say, I think he has listened to some renders because he,
sure
he remember when he said that Brent was real smart, Josh?
Yeah.
And
what
said
am I,
nothing
chopped liver?
About you.
He didn't say anything about us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I enjoyed the, what do you call it when you had your coat and tie or your coat on and your white shirt? That was pretty, that was
funny.
That was, as a dad, that was like, where did this little dirt ball come from?
Yeah, how nice and clean
so,
he looked. And then
okay,
you look at him right now.
I get
now.
Real self-conscious about that stuff.
Hey, it looked nice, man. I'm telling you, that's the only time I've ever looked at you. And I thought, hey, that's my boy right there. Look at him.
what am I, chopped liver wearing my coonskin hat and Dan's overalls right now, man? Come on, brother. No, not the way I looked. I mean, anybody
that
dress up and look good. No, I get self-conscious about harassing Steve Ranella. Because people think I'm serious. Literally, you'll put something like that on Instagram, and they'll be like, Clay's such a jerk, man.
That's you what know? Makes it funnier to me. I'm like, if I don't get satire, dude.
Yeah, so I started, you would have seen me start my post with, this is satire. I really like Steve Ranella and Carl Malcolm. I'm not really belittling them. I think they're great hunters.
It's going to be on my Google home feed, like Clay Newcomb, Steve Ranella, and Brutal.
Yeah, yeah. For some reason, that got to me when somebody was like, what an arrogant jerk. You know? Yeah, I couldn't sleep that night. It's like, man, it was supposed to be a joke.
Hey, was that all off the cuff, or did you
have that scripted out, sort of.
It really is all off the cuff.
That's what I thought. See, that's, you know, you want to, I like what you were saying about, you know, you want to dig deep and look at the science and how people act. A lot of times it's just, I mean, you just got the stuff to do it. You know what I'm saying?
What we do on those videos is we, at Isaac Neal, he films them and makes them, and he makes them funny. Isaac is great at making them funny. He does the edit, and Isaac coaches me too. So we'll watch an episode of Meat Eater, and I will just comment on anything that stands out. So we'll watch the whole thing, and I might talk for 10 minutes.
He'll pick out.
And he'll go, hey, do that again, but say it like this. And I'll be like, yeah, that'd be funny. And so, you know, some things we kind of but it's kind of just like off the cuff, just kind of slinging stuff. But it's a fine line because you don't want to like you could really like rip someone a new one and you don't want to do that entirely. You kind of want to hit kidney punch them a few times, but then end on a high note because really the episodes are incredible. I mean, Meat Eater is like, art, you know, for sure one of the best outdoor productions ever.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Ever. And so, you know, here I am making fun of it.
Which
and
is the humor of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And Steve Rinell is a way better hunter than you.
I mean, for sure, in Western hunting.
Yeah. You get him back here in these mountains in Arkansas.
Get after it.
Make him
look like a poodle.
And then squirrels.
He did walk up in here with his .22, though. I thought that was impressive.
Yeah. Ask him how many squirrels he killed.
Okay.
Sometimes when we go places, there's a thing in our family, there's a belief that I don't know how to leave. Like, I can't get out of a conversation.
It's more of a fact.
So we go to church or we go wherever, and the kids are like, all waiting in the car, Clay and the kids. So they've coached me on how to leave a conversation. I feel like the end of this Bear Grease podcast is sort of like, we're not really quite sure how to leave.
Yeah.
I have an idea.
Of how we can leave?
Well, we started.
I could scold that squirrel dog for barking.
We started this.
Go ahead, Ben.
We started talking about the spray, and when this is my first time on the render. When I came in, the first thing you did was turn and spray the room, and I was like, "Wow, this is a big deal."
You're like, "We need like scent."
It's got to smell right.
This is the Bear Grease render scent.
The official if you body
wanna,
spray of
if
the
you're wearing a Bear Grease hat and want to have a great time, hit a little bit of that in your house, and all of a sudden,
the only thing that would make it better is if this chair would break right now.
The whole time I've been saying, don't make that a talking point by you falling on your butt on this chair. Yeah.
Well, Ben, thanks for coming, man.
Thanks
We're gonna have you back on. We got to have Jessica on here sometime.
That'd be great
because she's a bear hunting expert.
True.
And a childbirth.
That's right.
All right, thanks, guys.
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/grease today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/grease.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.